Good morning again, she says with a radiant smile, her hair flowing down over her shoulders. Well, hello, coffee. The aroma is mouthwatering. I love proper coffee. I sit up and she places the tray on my lap. Eggs, coffee, toast. This is a treat. You said you wanted to stay in bed. She climbs in beside me and steals a piece of buttered toast. Here, I scoop up some scrambled eggs on a fork and offer it to her. She opens her mouth and I feed her. Mmm, she says, and closes her eyes in appreciation. My dick rouses at the sight. Steady. Let's eat first. The eggs are amazing. She's added feta cheese, I think. This is heaven on a plate, Alessia. Her cheeks pink and she takes a sip of coffee. I wanted to play some music. On the piano. No, I mean to listen. Oh, you need a phone. Here. I reach over and grab my iPhone. I really must get her a phone. This is the code. I punch in my security code to unlock it. And I use this app, Sonos. You can have music anywhere in the house. I hand it to her. She starts flicking through the app. You have so much music. I like music. She shoots me a quick smile. Me too. I take a sip of coffee.
Oh! How much sugar did you put in this? I splutter.
Oh, I'm sorry. I forget you don't have the sugar. And she screws up her face, and I think it's because she cannot contemplate coffee without sugar. Is this how you drink it? In Albania? Yes. I'm amazed you have any teeth left. She grins, showing me she has perfect teeth. I have never tried coffee without sugar. I will make you some more. She hops out of bed, all long naked legs and flowing raven hair. It's okay, don't go. I want to. And she disappears once more, taking my phone with her. A few moments later, I hear Dua Lipa singing One Kiss over the sound system downstairs. Alessia doesn't just like classical music. I smile. I think the artist is Albanian too.
Alessia dances around the kitchen, preparing another coffee for Maxim. She cannot remember a time when she felt this content. She came close at times when she was dancing and singing with her mother in the kitchen in Kukës, but here there is more room to dance, and with the lights on, she can see her image reflected in the glass wall that leads to the balcony. She grins. She looks so happy. It's such a contrast to when she arrived in Cornwall. Outside, it's a cold and wet morning. She shimmies over to the window and stares out at the scene. The sky and sea are a dismal gray, and the wind is battering and sculpting the silvery trees that line the path to the beach, but it's still a sight she finds magical. The surf is crashing on the shore, white-whipped and foamy, yet she can only hear the faint roar of the waves and cannot feel a draft through the glass doors. She's impressed. The house is well built, and she's grateful that she's here, warm and cozy with Maxim. The espresso machine burbles, and she sashays back across the room to make his coffee. Maxim is still in bed, but he's finished his breakfast and placed the tray on the floor.
There you are. I missed you, he says when Alessia returns with fresh, unsweetened coffee.
She hands him the cup, and he drains the entire contents as she gets back into bed.
That's better, he says. You like it?
Very much. He puts the coffee cup aside.
But I like you more.
He hooks his index finger over the first button of the oversized PJ top that she's wearing and tugs. The button opens, revealing the soft swell of her breast, and with his eyes burning into hers, he runs his finger gently over her skin and across her nipple. Her breath catches as her nipple peaks and hardens beneath his touch.
Her lips part in a silent gasp, and her gaze is intense and inviting. My dick stirs. Again? I whisper. Will I ever have my fill of this woman? Alessia's coy smile is encouragement enough. Leaning forward, I press my lips against hers and undo the rest of her buttons and slip the pajama shirt off her shoulders. You're so beautiful. My words are an invocation. Her eyes on mine, she raises her hand hesitantly, and her finger traces the line of my jaw, brushing my stubble. Through her parted lips, I watch as she runs her tongue across the underside of her top teeth. Hmm. Her voice rumbles in her throat. You like it? Or do you want me to shave? I whisper. She shakes her head. I like this. Her fingertips stroke my chin. You do? She nods, and leaning in, plants a soft kiss at the corner of my mouth and runs her tongue over my stubble, following the line her finger took earlier. I feel it in my groin. Oh, Alessia. I grasp her face and lower us both onto the bed, kissing her as we recline. My lips are on hers, my tongue is on hers, and she's as greedy as ever, taking all I have to give. My hand travels down her body, over her breast, her waist, and her hip, and I cup her backside and squeeze. My lips follow, worshipping her breasts in turn until she's squirming beneath me. And when I gaze at her to catch my breath, she's panting. I want to try something new, I murmur. Her mouth forms the letter O. Okay, I ask. Yes, she says, but her wide-eyed look tells me she's uncertain. Don't worry, I think you'll like it, but if you don't, just tell me to stop. She caresses my face. Okay, she whispers. I kiss her once more. Turn over. She looks puzzled. Onto your front. Oh. She giggles and does as she's told. I prop myself up on my elbow and sweep her hair aside and off her back. She has a beautiful back and an even lovelier backside. I glide my hand down the curve of her spine to her behind, enjoying the soft, smooth planes of her skin. Leaning over her, I kiss the little mole at the base of her neck. You're so lovely. I murmur in her ear and plant soft kisses from there down her neck and along her shoulder as my hand continues to descend and move between her buttocks. She wiggles her ass beneath my palm as I slip my hand farther between her legs and begin to circle her clitoris with my fingers. Her head is lying on the bed, her cheek to the sheet, so I can easily observe her. Alessia's eyes are closed, her mouth open as she inhales, absorbing the pleasure elicited by my fingers. That's right, I whisper, and slip my thumb into her. She whimpers. She's wet and warm and wonderful. She pushes her behind against my hand, and I circle my thumb inside her. She gasps, and it's a call to my bursting dick. I keep up the rhythm, round and round. She tightens her hold on the sheets and screws up her eyes as she moans. She's close, so close, and I withdraw my thumb and reach for a condom. She blinks up at me, wanting, ready. Don't move, I murmur, and shift between her legs, parting them with my knee. I pull her up onto my lap so she's sitting astride me facing the wall. My dick snuggles in the line between her buttocks. One day. We're going to do this from behind, I murmur. Her head whips around to me, her eyebrows raised in alarm. I laugh. No, not like that. Like this. Lifting her, I ease her slowly down on my erection. Her fingernails dig into my thighs, and her head drops back on my shoulder while I graze her earlobe with my teeth. She's panting, but she tenses her legs and haltingly rises up and down again. Fuck. Yes. That's right, I whisper, and I shift my hands to her breasts, cupping them both and teasing each nipple between my thumb and forefingers. Ah! She cries, and it's a primeval, sexy sound. Fuck! You okay? Yes! Slowly I lift her up and over, and she places her hands on the bed. I ease back and then forward into her. She cries out, and bending down, places her head and shoulders on the bed. She looks amazing. Her hair sprawled across the sheets, her eyes tight shut, her mouth open and her ass in the air. The mere sight of her makes me want to come. She also feels amazing. Every single fucking inch of her. I grasp her hips and move into and out of her again. Yeah, she groans, and I start to move harder, really move harder still. This is heaven. She cries out and I stop. No. Her voice is hoarse. Please, don't stop. Oh, baby. And I'm unleashed. I take her, over and over, sweat beading on my brow and trickling down my body as I hold back my release until finally she cries out and climaxes around me again and again and again. I thrust once more and join her, loving her, filling her, and collapsing on top of her while calling out her name.
Alessia lies on her front, breathless, spiraling down from her climax as he lies on top of her. His weight is agreeable. She never knew her body had such capacity for pleasure. She's sweaty and languid and satisfied, wrung out from her incredible orgasm. But as she recovers her composure, truth be told, she feels a little guilty at this indolence. She has never spent the whole morning in bed. He nuzzles her ear.
You're incredible, he whispers as he moves to her side and gathers her in his arms. She closes her eyes. No, you are, she says. I never knew. I mean, she stops and looks up at him. That it could be so intense? Yes. His brow crinkles. Yes, I know what you mean. He gazes through the window at the gray, rain-soaked vista. Do you want to go out? She snuggles closer, filling her senses with him. The smell of his skin, his warmth. No, I like being here with you. I like it too. He kisses the top of her head and closes his eyes.
I wake alone from my doze, only to hear the strains of Rachmaninoff, my favorite of his concertos, coming from downstairs. It sounds odd, and then I realize it's just the piano. Of course, there's no orchestra. Oh, this I have to see. I jump out of bed and drag on my jeans, but I can't find my sweater, so I grab the throw from the end of the bed, wrap it around my shoulders, and head downstairs. Alessia is playing the piano, wearing nothing but my cream sweater. She's found some earbuds and is listening to my iPhone with her eyes closed, and she's playing. Without the sheet music, without an orchestra. Is she listening to the concerto? She must be. Her fingers fly over the keys, and the music surges through the room with so much feeling and finesse it leaves me breathless. She leaves me breathless. I can almost hear the orchestra in my imagination. How does she do this? She truly is a prodigy. I watch her, transfixed as the music soars. It's emotional. She reaches the crescendo at the end of the movement, her head bobbing in time to the music, her hair rippling down her back, and she stops. She sits for a moment, her hands in her lap as the notes fade into the ether. I feel I'm intruding, watching her like she's an exotic species in her own unique habitat. But I can't help it. I break the spell and raise my hands and applaud. She opens her eyes, surprised, I think, to see me there. That was sensational. She takes the earbuds out of her ears and gives me a shy smile. I'm sorry, I didn't mean to wake you. You didn't. I've only played this a few times. I was learning it before I left. She stops. Well, you play it very well. I could hear the orchestra. From the phone? No, in my imagination. You were that good. Were you listening to the piece? She flushes. Thank you. Yes, I was. You should be on the stage. I would pay to see you. She grins. What colors did you see? I ask. In the music? I nod. Oh, this is a rainbow, she says with such raw enthusiasm. So many different colors. She opens up her arms to try to convey the complexity of what she sees, but it's something I'll never know. It's like a kaleidoscope? Yes, yes. She nods vigorously with a huge smile, and I realize that the word must be the same in Albanian. As it should be,
I love this piece. I love you. I step toward her and kiss her on the lips. I am in awe of your talent, Mr. Marchi. She stands and places her arms around my neck. I wrap us both in the throw that I'm wearing. I am in awe of yours, Mr. Maxim, she says, and she laces her fingers around my neck and pulls my lips toward hers. What? Again? She moves up and down, more graceful this time, tall and proud. She looks amazing as her breasts bounce with her. Her eyes are intent on me. She's embracing her power, and it's so fucking sexy. Her tempo is perfect, and she takes me higher and higher. She leans down and threads her fingers through mine, squeezing them, then kisses me. An open-mouthed, wet and warm, demanding kiss. Oh, beautiful. I moan. I'm close. And she leans up and tilts her head back and cries out my name as she comes. Fuck! I'm lost, and I let go and join her. When I open my eyes, she's gazing down at me in wonder.
Alessia is sprawled on Maxim's chest, and they're lying on the floor of the living room by the piano. Her heart is slowing and her breathing subsiding, but she shivers. She's a little cold. Here, Maxim drapes the throw over her. You are going to wear me out. He flinches as he pulls the condom off but smiles up at her. I like wearing you out, and I like looking down at you, she whispers. I like looking up at you. Watching him come when she's on top of him gives her a sense of power, a power she never thought she'd have. It's heady. Now if she could just pluck up the courage to touch all of him. His glowing green eyes burn into hers. You really are something, Alessia, he says, and he smooths her hair from her face. For a moment, she thinks he's going to say something else, but he smiles up at her, a glorious smile. Then he adds, I'm hungry. She gasps, I must feed you. She tries to move, but he holds her in place. Don't go. You're keeping me warm. I should light a fire. He kisses her jaw, and she snuggles into him, feeling a peace she didn't know was possible. We should go out to eat, Maxim says. It must be after 4 o'clock. The rain is still hammering down outside. I want to cook for you.
You do?
Yes, I like cooking, Alessia replies. Especially for you. Okay.
Alessia winces as she sits up on me. What is it? I ask, and I sit up in one swift move so we're nose to nose. The throw falls to her waist, and I pull it up to keep her warm. She blushes. I am a little sore. Fuck. Why didn't you tell me?
Because you probably wouldn't have done that, she says, averting her eyes and her voice low.
Damned right! I close my eyes and place my forehead on hers. I'm sorry, I whisper. I'm an idiot. She places her fingers on my lips.
No, don't be sorry.
We don't have to do this.
What am I saying?
I want to do this. I mean it. I really like it, she insists. Alessia, you have to talk to me. Tell me. Frankly, I could do this all day with you. But enough. We're going out. First, though, let's have a shower and get cleaned up. I lift her off me, stand up, collect our clothes from the floor, and together we head back upstairs. I turn on the water in the shower as Alessia watches me, huddled in the throw, her eyes dark and mysterious. The afternoon sun is beginning to fade. I switch on the lights and test the water. It's toasty. Ready? I ask her. She nods and lets the throw fall to her feet, and she dashes past me into the piping hot stream of water. I join her, and we both stand under the cascading shower as it warms us. I grab the shower gel, pleased that she's becoming more comfortable about revealing her gorgeous body. That's what happens when you spend the day fucking. I grin and begin to lather some soap in my hands.
She has never showered with anyone. She can feel him move about behind her, his body brushing against her, that part of his body brushing against her as she stands beneath the shower, the part she hasn't dared touch yet. She wants to. She just needs to find the self-confidence. The water is deliciously hot. She closes her eyes and enjoys the soothing feel of it bouncing off her skin, making it a little pink. He moves her hair from her back and places a wet kiss on her shoulder. "You're so beautiful," he says. She feels his hands at her neck, and with circular strokes he starts to massage the soap into her skin. His strong fingers knead her muscles. "Ah," she groans. "You like?" "Yes, muchly."
"Muchly? My English?" Alessia senses Maxim's grin.
"Is much better than my Albanian."
She giggles.
"This is true. It is funny. I say the wrong word and it sounds right to me, but when you say it, it does sound wrong.
It must be my accent. Do you want me to wash you all over?" His voice is husky.
"All over?"
Alessia's breath hitches.
"Mm-hmm," Maxim confirms, the sound a low, sexy rumble near her ear.
He puts his arms around her and soaps his hands and begins to knead the soap into her skin. He washes her neck, her breasts, her belly, and gently between her thighs. Her head rolls back on his chest as she surrenders to his touch, feeling his excitement against the top of her backside. She moans, and his breathing deepens, becoming harsher in her ear. Suddenly he stops.
"There, you're done, and I think we should get out."
"What?"
She feels bereft without his hands on her.
"Enough."
He opens the shower door and exits the shower.
"But,"
she protests. He grabs a towel and puts it around his waist, covering his erection.
"I only have so much willpower, and amazingly, my body is ready for action again."
She pouts, and he laughs.
"Don't tempt me."
He holds up the blue robe and waits for her. She shuts off the water and steps out of the shower, where he wraps her in the robe and holds her.
"You are irresistible, but as much as I want you, enough. And I'm hungry."
He kisses the top of her head and releases her. She watches him leave the bathroom, feeling her heart swell with her love for him.
"Should I tell him?"
But as she follows him into the bedroom, her courage fails her. She likes how they are at the moment. She has no idea how he'll react, and she doesn't want to burst their bubble.
"I will get dressed and cook for you."
He cocks an eyebrow.
"You don't have to get dressed."
She feels her cheeks pink.
"He has no shame."
But he beams, his smile so dazzling that it takes her breath away.
It's almost midnight, and I lie gazing at Alessia, who is fast asleep beside me. What a wonderful, lazy, falling in love Monday. It's been a perfect day. Making love, eating, making love, drinking, making love, and listening to Alessia play the piano and watching her cook. She shifts and mumbles something in her sleep. Her skin is translucent in the light from the little dragon, her breathing soft and even. She must be exhausted after all we've done, yet she's still a little shy. One of these days, I want her to touch me, everywhere. I stiffen at the thought. Enough! She will, in her own time, I'm sure. We didn't even leave the house today, all day. And she cooked for me once more, another delicious and wholesome meal. Tomorrow I'd like to do something special with her, something outdoors, provided the weather improves. Show her where you grew up. No, not yet. I shake my head. Tell her. An idea comes to mind, and if the weather is better tomorrow, it will be fun. and it may give me the opportunity to tell her who I am. We'll see. I plant a tender kiss on her temple, inhaling her sweet fragrance. She stirs and mumbles something unintelligible, but she settles and sleeps on. I've fallen in love with you, Alessia. I close my eyes.
Chapter 19. Alessia wakes, listening to the low rumble of Maxon's voice. She opens her eyes to see him sitting up next to her on the phone. He smiles down at her and continues his conversation.
I'm glad Miss Chenoweth agreed, he says. I think a 20-bore for the lady. I'll have my Purdy's. She wonders what he's talking about. Whatever it is, his eyes shine with excitement. Let's use the easy birds, the teals. Maxim winks at her. About 10? Great. I'll see Jenkins then. Thanks, Michael. He ends the call and snuggles back down into bed, his head on the pillow facing her. Good morning, Alessia. He leans across and gives her a swift kiss. Sleep well. Yes, thank you. You look lovely. Hungry? She stretches out beside him and his eyes darken. She says. You look very tempting. She smiles. But you said you were sore. He kisses her on her nose. And I have a surprise for you today. After breakfast, we're going out. Dress warm, and you might want to plait your hair.
He climbs out of bed. Alessia pouts. She was sore yesterday. She feels fine this morning. But before she can cajole him into a little more time in bed, he waltzes naked into the bathroom. All she can do is admire his fine physique, the muscles in his back rippling as he walks, his long legs, his backside. He turns and gives her a wicked smile, then closes the door. She grins. What does he have planned?
Where are we going? Alessia asks. She's wearing her green hat, her new coat, and I know she's wearing layers beneath. I think she'll be warm enough. It's a surprise. I give her a sideways look, then ease the car into gear. Before she woke this morning, I called the hall and spoke to Michael, the estate manager. It's a crisp, bright day, perfect for what I've arranged. After all our rigorous activity yesterday, we need a break and some fresh air. Rosperrin Farm has been part of the Trevethick estate since Georgian times. The Chenoweth family has been tenant farmers there for more than 100 years. The present incumbent, Abigail Chenoweth, has given us permission to set up in one of the fallow southerly fields. As we get nearer, I wish I were in the Discovery. My jag isn't good with fields, but we can park on the road. When we pull up, the gate is already open, and inside I spy Jenkins and his Land Rover Defender. He gives me a cheery wave. I flash an enthusiastic grin at Alessia. We're going to shoot clays. Alessia looks bemused. Clays? Clay pigeons? She appears to be none the wiser. I'm now less certain that this is a good idea. It'll be fun. She gives me a worried smile and I get out of the car. It's a cold day, but not so cold that I can see the condensation of my breath. Hopefully we'll be warm enough. Good morning, my lord, Jenkins says. Hi. I check to see if Alessia has overheard, but she's climbing out on her side of the car. Sir, will do, Jenkins, I mutter as she approaches us. This is Alessia DiMarchi. She takes his outstretched hand. Good morning, miss. Good morning. She gives him a charming smile, and Jenkins flushes. His family has served the Trevelyans for 3 generations, though mainly at Angwin, our Oxfordshire estate. Jenkins flew the family coop 4 years ago and has been working at Tressilian Hall as an assistant gamekeeper. He's a little younger than me and a keen surfer. I've seen him on a board. He put Kit and me to shame. He's also an excellent shot and an expert gamekeeper. He runs many of the shoots on the estate. Beneath his flat cap and shock of sun-bleached hair, he has a good brain and a cheerful, easy smile. Alessia looks up at me with a puzzled expression. We are hunting birds? No, we're shooting clays. She looks nonplussed. They're discs made of clay. Oh. I've brought a couple of shotgun choices for the lady. I have your Purdy's, and Miss Campbell insisted I bring your shooting jacket, sir. Great. And coffee, and sausage rolls, and hand warmers. Jenkins smiles. Trust Danny. The traps are set. Teals, he says. Excellent. I turn to Alessia. Good surprise? I ask her, feeling doubtful. Yes, she says, but she doesn't sound certain. Have you shot a gun before? She shakes her head. My father has guns. He does? He hunts. Hunts? She shrugs. Well, he will go out with his gun. He will go out overnight to shoot wolves. Wolves? She laughs at my expression. Yes, we have wolves in Albania, but I have never seen one. I'm not sure my father has either. She smiles at me. I would like to shoot. Jenkins gives her a warm smile and directs her to the back of the Defender, where he has our guns and all the necessary equipment. She listens intently to what he has to say. He takes her through a safety briefing and shows her how the gun works and what she needs to do. While he does, I change quickly into my waistcoat and jacket. It's chilly, but I'm warm enough in these old clothes. I open my gun case and remove one of the Purdy 12-bore shotguns. It's a rare vintage piece that belonged to my grandfather. He commissioned a matching pair of Purdy over and under shotguns in 1948. The silver engravings are exquisite and bear the charges from the Trebethick coat of arms intricately interwoven, with Tressilian Hall in the background. The stock is a rich, gleaming walnut. The pair of guns were handed down to my father on my grandfather's death, and when Kit turned 18, my father gave him one of the guns as a birthday gift. When my father died, Kit gave me this one, the one that belonged to my dad. And now, with Kit gone, I own both of them. I'm hit by a sudden wave of sadness. A vision of the three of us in the gun room. My father cleaning this gun, my brother cleaning his then 20-bore, and me looking on as an excited 8-year-old, finally allowed in the gun room. My father calmly explained how to dismantle the gun, how to oil the stock, grease the steels, clean the barrel and the action. He was meticulous, and so was Kit. I remember watching them with wide-eyed fascination. All set, sir? Jenkins pulls me out of my reverie. Yes, great. Alessia is wearing protective eyeglasses and ear defenders. She still manages to look lovely. She cocks her head to one side. What? I ask. I like this jacket. I laugh. This old thing. It's just Harris tweed. I grab some cartridges, protective glasses and some ear defenders and break open the barrel of my gun. Ready? I ask Alessia. She nods, and with her Browning shotgun open, we all walk over to the makeshift shooting area that Jenkins has set up with some hay bales. I have the trap set just beyond that ridge for a low-driven target, Jenkins says. Can I see a bird? Sure. Jenkins presses his remote, and a clay flies into the air about 100 meters in front of us. Alessia gasps. I will never hit that. Yes, you will. Watch, stand back. And I feel like showing off. She's a better pianist than me. She can cook better than me. And she beat me at chess. Give me 2 birds, Jenkins. Yes, sir. I put on my glasses and ear protection, then open and load the barrel with 2 cartridges and mount my gun. Ready. Pull! Jenkins releases 2 clays that soar up in front of us. I squeeze the trigger and pop off the top barrel, then the second, hitting both clays so that they shatter, the shards falling to the ground like hail. Shot, sir, Jenkins says. You hit them, Alessia exclaims. I did. I can't help my smug grin. Okay, your turn. I open the barrel and stand aside for her. Feet apart, your weight on your back foot. Good. Look at the trap. You've seen the trajectory of the clay. You'll want to follow it up in a smooth movement. She nods vigorously. Mount the stock as hard against your shoulder as you can. You don't want any recoil. Okay. I'm amazed that she's following what I'm saying. Right foot back a bit, miss, Jenkins adds. Okay. Here are your cartridges. I hand her 2, and she loads them into the chamber and charges the gun. I stand back. When you're ready, shout pull. Jenkins will send up one clay, and you have two chances to hit it. She gives me an anxious glance and mounts her gun. She looks every bit the countrywoman, even in her woolly hat, her cheeks rosy and her plait hanging down her back.
Pull!
She shouts, and Jenkins releases a bird. It sails up before us, and she fires first one, then the second shot, and misses both times. She pouts as the clay smashes on the ground several feet away from us. You'll get the hang of it. Have another go. A steely glint appears in her eye, and Jenkins steps forward to give her some pointers. On the fourth clay, she hits it.
Yes!
I shout in encouragement. She dances over to me.
Whoa, whoa, barrel down!
Both Jenkins and I exclaim simultaneously.
Sorry,
she giggles and opens the gun.
Can I have another shoot?
Of course, we have all morning, and it's shot. She beams at me. Her nose is pink, but her eyes are bright and lively with the thrill of a new experience. Her smile could melt the hardest of hearts, and mine fills with elation. It's so gratifying to see her enjoying herself after all she's been through.
Alessia and Maxim sit in the trunk of Mr. Jenkins' car, their legs hanging over the back, sipping coffee from a thermos and eating pastries with some kind of meat inside. Alessia thinks it's pork.
You did well, Maxim says. 20 out of 40 clays isn't bad going for a first time.
You did much better.
I've done this before, many times. He takes a sip of coffee.
Did you enjoy it?
Yes, I'd like to do it again. Maybe when it is not so cold.
I would like that.
She smiles as her heart skips a beat. He wants to do this again, too. That's a good sign, surely.
She takes a sip of coffee.
Aye, she grimaces. What is it?
No sugar.
Is it that bad?
She takes another cautious sip and swallows.
No, it's not that bad.
Your teeth will thank you.
What would you like to do now?
Can we walk by the sea again?
Sure, and then we can go for lunch.
Jenkins returns. The trap's all packed, sir. Great. Thanks for this morning, Jenkins. It's a pleasure, my sir. I'd like to take my guns back to the hideout and give them a clean there.
Of course.
You'll find all you need in the case.
Excellent.
Good day, sir. We shake hands. Miss, he says, and he touches his fingers to his cap as a slow flush spreads across his cheeks.
Thank you, Jenkins,
Alessia says, and when she gives him a brilliant smile, his cheeks redden more. I think she has a new conquest. Shall we go? I ask her.
It is your gun?
Yes. She frowns. Jenkins keeps it for me. By law, it has to be locked up. We have a gun cabinet at the hideout.
Oh,
she says, her confusion obvious. Ready? I ask to distract her. She nods. I'll have to take this home. I hold up the gun case, and we can go for a walk on the beach, then somewhere nice for lunch.
Okay.
I open the car door for her, and she gives me a fleeting smile as she climbs in.
That was close. Just tell her.
Every day I don't tell her who I am, I'm lying to her.
Fuck. It's as simple as that.
I open the boot and place the gun case inside.
Just fucking tell her.
I get in beside her, close the car door, and glance across at her. Alessia.
Look!
She exclaims, and points through the windscreen. Before us stands a magnificent buck deer, its coat grey and long, appropriate for the winter months, its usual white spots hidden in among its fur. Where the hell did it come from? It's less than 4 years old, judging by its size, but it sports an impressive set of antlers, which I know it'll shed over the next couple of months. I wonder if it's from the fallow deer herd we have at the hall, or if it's wild. If it's from the hall, how did it get out? It peers down its imperious nose, fixing us with black eyes.
Wah!
Alessia whispers. Have you ever seen a deer? I ask.
No.
We stare at the beast as it flares its nostrils and sniffs the air. Maybe the wolves ate them all, I whisper. She turns to me and laughs, head back and free. It's such an endearing sound. I made her laugh. In the nearby field, Jenkins starts his Land Rover, spooking the buck. It rears back, turns, and bolts over the dry stone wall into some scrubland.
I didn't know there were wild animals in this country, Alessia says.
We have a few. I start the car, feeling that the moment to tell her is lost. Bollocks. I'll tell her later. And deep down, I know the longer I wait, the worse it's going to be when I finally spill the beans. My phone buzzes in my jacket. It's a text, and I know it's from Caroline. That's another issue I have to deal with at some point. But right now, I'm going to take my lady for another walk on the beach.
Alessia holds up the little dragon, a lantern in the darkness, as they lie in bed.
Thank you, she whispers, for today, for yesterday, for this. It's my pleasure, Alessia, Maxim responds. I've had a wonderful day. I did too. I don't want it to end. This has been the very best day.
Maxim strokes her cheek with his index finger.
The very best day. I'm glad I got to spend it with you. You really are lovely.
She swallows, glad that the fading light will hide her blush.
I'm not sore anymore, she whispers.
Maxim stills, his eyes searching hers.
Oh, baby, he says,
and suddenly his mouth swoops down on hers.
It's after midnight, and Alessia dozes beside me. I must tell her about who I am. Earl of Trevethick. Fuck. She deserves to know. I rub my face. Why am I so reluctant to come clean? Because I don't know how she feels about me. And also, apart from my title, there's the small matter of my wealth. Bugger. My mother's suspicious nature has left its mark.
Women will only want you for your wealth, Maxim. Remember that.
God, Rowena can be such a bitch. Gently, in order not to wake her, I lift a strand of Alessia's hair and wind it around my finger. She was reluctant to let me buy her clothes. Reluctant when she has nothing. She doesn't want me to buy her a phone, and she always chooses the cheapest item on the menu. This is not the modus operandi of a gold digger. Is it? And the other day, she said that I have no rivals. I think she cares for me. If she does, I wish she'd tell me. It would make this so much easier. She's talented, bright, and brave, and eager. I smile, thinking about her carnal appreciation. Yes, eager. I lean over and kiss her hair. And she can cook. I love you, Alessia de Marchi. I whisper, and I lay my head on my pillow and gaze at her. This beguiling woman. My beautiful, precious girl. I'm woken by my phone. It's morning, and too bloody early, judging by the dim light seeping through the space between the blinds. Alessia is wrapped around me as I reach across and pick up my phone. It's Mrs. Beckstrom, my neighbour in London. Why the hell is she calling me?
Hello, Mrs. Beckstrom. Is everything all right?
My voice is low, so I don't wake Alessia.
Ah, Maxim, there you are. I am sorry to call you so early, but I think you've been burgled.
Chapter 20.
What?
A chill sweeps across my skin as every hair on my body stands to attention, and suddenly I'm fully awake. I run my fingernails over my scalp.
Burgled? How? When?
My mind and heart are racing.
Yes, I was taking Heracles for a morning walk. I do so love a walk beside the river early in the morning, whatever the weather. It's so quiet and restful.
I roll my eyes. Get on with it, Mrs. B.
Your front door is open. It may have been open for a few days, I don't know, but I thought it odd. So today I had a peek inside, and of course you're not there.
Did I lock the flat in my panic to leave and go search for Alessia? I can't remember.
I'm afraid the place is a frightful mess.
Fuck.
I was going to call the police, but I thought I'd call you instead, dear.
Well, thank you. I appreciate it. I'll deal with this.
I am so sorry to be the bearer of bad news.
It's okay, Mrs. B. Thank you.
I hang up. Shit. Fuck. Bollocks. What if the fuck is stolen? I don't have much. All the important stuff is in the safe. I hope they haven't found that. Bugger. 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 What a fucking nuisance. I may have to go back to London, and I don't want to go. I'm having way too much fun with Alessia.
I sit up in bed and look down at her. She's blinking up at me sleepily, and I give her a reassuring smile.
I've got to make a call.
I don't want to worry her with these details, so I get up, wrap the throw around my waist, and head into the spare room with my phone. I call Oliver as I pace the floor.
Why didn't the alarm go off? Did I set it? Shit. I left in such a rush, I don't know.
Maxim!
He's surprised to hear from me.
Everything okay?
Good morning. My neighbor's just called me. She says I've been burgled.
Oh, shit.
Precisely. I'll get around there right away. It shouldn't take me more than 15 minutes at this time.
Great. I'll ring you back in about 20. I hang up. My mood has nosedived, and I start to think about what I'd really miss if it was taken. My cameras, my decks, my computer.
Shit, my father's cameras. What a fucking pain in the ass this is. Some fucking low-life addict, or maybe some feral teenage kids wrecking my place. Fuck a duck.
I had plans to spend the day with Alessia, maybe go down to the Eden Project. Well, I might still be able to do so, but I need to assess the damage, and I don't want to do it from my phone. If I FaceTime Oliver from the iMac up at the Great House, I'll get a better view. He can show me via his phone what's happened. Feeling fucked off and with a heavy heart, I head back into the bedroom where Alessia is still in bed.
What is wrong?
She asks, sitting up, her hair falling over her breasts. She looks rumpled and sexy and eminently fuckable. The sight of her is a balm that immediately makes me feel better. But sadly, I'll have to leave her for a short while. I don't want to burden her with this news. She's had enough to deal with over the last few weeks. I've got to pop out and take care of something. We may even have to go back to London, but you stay in bed. Sleep. I know you're tired. I'll be back soon. She pulls the quilt up, her brow furrowed in concern. I give her a swift kiss and go grab a shower. When I come out of the bathroom, she's gone. I dress quickly, in jeans and a white shirt. I find her downstairs in the kitchen, wearing only my pajama top and clearing up our dishes from the night before. She hands me a cup of espresso.
To wake you up,
she says with an adoring smile, though her eyes are wide, wary. She's anxious. I swallow it down. It's hot, strong, and delicious. A little like Alessia. Don't worry, I'll be back before you know it. I kiss her once more, grab my coat, and I'm out the door, dodging the raindrops and bolting up the steps. I climb into the car and speed off along the lane.
Alessia watches Maxim vault up the steps and close the gate behind him. He looks worried, and she wonders where he's going. Something bad has happened. A frisson skitters up her spine, but she's not sure why. She sighs. There's so much she doesn't know about him. And he said they might have to return to London. She will have to face the reality of her situation. Homelessness. Zot. She's pushed it all aside for the last few days, but so much is unresolved in her life. Where will she live? Will Dante have given up looking for her? How does Maxim feel about her? She sucks in a breath as she tries to shake off her concerns and hopes that he can deal with whatever the problem is quickly and return. Even now, the house feels empty without him. The last few days have been blissful, and she hopes they don't have to go back to London. She's not ready to return to reality yet. She's never been happier than she is here with him. In the meantime, she'll finish loading the dishwasher. Then she'll shower.
I take a shortcut along the back roads to the great house that is Tressilian Hall, because it's faster than going up the main drive. The rain is growing heavier, drumming on the car windscreen and roof as I slice through the narrow lanes. Passing the gatehouse at the southern entrance to the estate, I slow as the car rattles over the cattle grid, then accelerate up the driveway through the south pasture. In this winter rain, the landscape is dreary and damp and dotted with the occasional sheep. Come spring, the cattle will be out to graze again. Through the leafless trees, I catch sight of the house. Nestled in the wide dale, slate grey and gothic, it dominates the landscape, as if plucked from a novel by one of the Bronte sisters. The original house was built on the site of an old Benedictine priory, but the land and the abbey were seized by Henry VIII during the dissolution of the monasteries. Over a century later, in 1661, following the restoration of the monarchy, the estate was bestowed, along with the title Earl of Trevethick, to Edward Trevelyan for his services to Charles II. The great house he built was all but destroyed by fire in 1862, and this neo-Gothic monstrosity, with all its finials and fake-moulded battlements, was built in its place. It's the seat of the Earls of Trevethick, a huge rambling pile, and I've always loved it.
And now it's mine. I am the custodian.
The car rocks over a second cattle grid as I drive around the back of the great house and pull up outside the old stables where Kit's car collection is housed. Abandoning the Jag, I dash up to the kitchen door and I'm pleased to find it open. Jessie is in the kitchen cooking breakfast, with Kit's dogs at her feet. "Good morning, Jessie," I call as I dash through. Jensen and Healy both jump up and scramble after me. Jessie's voice follows me out into the corridor.
"Maxim? I mean, my lord?"
I ignore her and head into Kit's study. Fuck, my study. The room feels and smells as if my big brother is still in residence, and I halt as an intense pang of grief bubbles up from nowhere.
"Damn you, Kit. I miss you."
The truth is, the office looks as though my father is still in residence. Kit had not changed a thing apart from installing an iMac. This was my father's refuge. The walls are painted blood red and covered with his photographs, landscapes and portraits, even a couple of my mother. The furniture dates back to before the war, the 1930s, I think. With canine enthusiasm, tails wagging and tongues licking, the dogs jump up at me while I make my way to the desk.
"Hello, boys. Hi there. Hi there. Steady."
I pet them both.
"Sir, it's great to see you, but is everything okay?"
Jessie asks as she enters behind me.
"The Chelsea flat has been burgled. I'm going to sort it out from here."
"Oh no!"
Jessie's hand flies to her mouth.
"No one's hurt," I reassure her. "Oliver's there and assessing the damage."
"That's terrible."
She wrings her hands.
"It's a pain in the arse, is what it is."
"Can I get you anything?"
"I'd love some coffee."
"I'll fetch some straight away."
She bustles out of the room, and Jensen and Healy, with mournful looks at me, follow her out. I sit down at Kit's, no, my desk. Firing up the iMac, I log in and open FaceTime, then click on Oliver's contact link.
Alessia stands under the powerful shower, enjoying the hot water streaming over her. She will miss this when they leave to go back to London. As she washes her hair, the thought depresses her. She's loved this magical time in Cornwall, just the two of them. She will always treasure the memory of her stay in this extraordinary house with him. "Maxim." As she soaps her hair, she opens one eye, unable to shake her anxiety. Even though she's locked the bathroom door, she's nervous. She's not used to being alone, and she's missing him. She's become accustomed to his presence, everywhere. She blushes and smiles. Yes, everywhere. Now if she could just work up the courage to touch him. Everywhere.
Much of my flat is unaffected by the burglary. The dark room is undisturbed, so my camera gear is intact. And more important, from a sentimental point of view, I still have my father's cameras. And I'm lucky the thieves didn't find the safe. They've stolen some of my shoes and some jackets from my wardrobe, though it's difficult to tell as there are clothes thrown around my bedroom. The drawing room, on the other hand, is a mess. All my photography has been ripped off the walls, my iMac is smashed on the floor, my laptop and mixing consoles are gone, and my vinyl is all over the floor. Fortunately, the piano is untouched.
That appears to be the extent of it, Oliver says. He's holding up his phone and using the camera so I can inspect the damage on my computer screen.
Fuckers. Any idea when they broke in? I ask.
No, your neighbor didn't see anything, but it could have been any time over the weekend.
It could have been after I left on Friday.
How did they get in?
You saw the state of the front door.
Yeah, they must have forced it with something heavy. The fuckers. I must have forgotten to set the alarm in my haste to leave.
It didn't go off. I think you probably did forget, but I don't think that would have deterred them.
Hello?
A disembodied voice from somewhere else in the flat interrupts us.
That will be the police, Oliver says.
You called them? That was quick. Good. Let me know what they say. Call me back.
Will do, sir.
He rings off. I stare despondently at the screen. I don't want to go back to London. I want to stay here. With Alessia. There's a knock on the door, and Danny appears in the doorway.
Good morning, sir. I hear you've been robbed.
Morning, Danny. Yes, though it doesn't look like I've lost anything irreplaceable. It's just a mess.
Mrs. Blake will be able to tidy up any mess. What a nuisance this is.
Indeed.
Where would you like your breakfast?
Breakfast?
Sir, Jessie's made you breakfast. French toast, your favourite.
Oh, I wanted to get back to Alessia. Danny, sensing my hesitancy, gives me the look over her glasses. The look that made me, Kit and Marianne quail as young kids.
You settle down now, children, and eat your supper, or I will tell your mother.
She always played the mothership card. I'll take it in the kitchen with you and the rest of the staff, but I have to be quick.
Very good, sir.
Alessia's wrapped in towels to dry off after her shower. In the walk-in closet, she rummages through the clothes that Maxim bought her a few days ago. She cannot seem to shake her apprehension. She jumps at every strange noise she hears. It's rare for her to be on her own. At home, in Cucas, her mother was always around, and in the evenings her father, too. Even in the Brentford house, when she lived with Magda, Alessia was seldom alone. Either Magda or Mikael was there. She wills herself to concentrate on the task at hand. After all, she has her new clothes. She decides on the black jeans with a gray top and a pretty pink cardigan. She hopes that Maxim will like what she's chosen. Finally dressed, she picks up the hairdryer and switches it on, its high-pitched whir filling the silence.
When I enter the kitchen, it's crowded and humming with the early morning banter of some of the staff, Jenkins among them. Seeing me, they all stand as one, a frankly feudal display of deference, which I find irritating. But I let it go.
Good morning, all. Please, sit. Enjoy your breakfast.
There are various pleasant mutterings of,
My lord.
During its heyday, Tressilian Hall would have employed well over 350 staff, but now we manage with 12 full-time and about 20 part-time employees. We also have 8 tenant farmers whom I met on my recent trip. They raise livestock and various arable crops across 10,000 acres, all organic, thanks to my father.
By Trevethic tradition, the outdoor and household staff eat at separate sittings. At this moment, the assistant estate managers, the gamekeeper, assistant gamekeeper, and the gardener